Hey, everybody. Welcome. Thanks for joining us today. My name is Mike Gibb. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I want to welcome you to today's webinar where we're talking about turning good collectors into great collectors. Like anything in life, if you want to be great at something, it takes a lot of hard work, dedication, and practice. For collection operations, turning individuals who are good collectors into great collectors is the dream. Great collectors not only collect more, but they make fewer mistakes and are better employees. So today in this webinar, which is being sponsored by Peak Revenue Learning, we've got a panel of experts here to break down the process of how you can turn good collectors into great ones. Unless everyone in your office is already a great collector, I think this is a webinar you need to watch. As I mentioned, this webinar is being sponsored by Peak Revenue Learning. Peak Revenue Learning's knowledge source will help you take advantage of the spacing and testing effects. These concepts have proven to be among the most effective methods of learning improvement and knowledge retention. The focused iteration training capabilities of Knowledge Source will have a major impact on employee understanding and application of the skills required to collect more money and the laws and related policies and procedures staff members must be compliant with. You can learn more by visiting them online at peakrevenuelearning.com. I will drop a link in the chat. Actually, I'm going to do it right now that you can use to click on to visit their website. And we're going to hear a little bit more from Chris Rickman from Peak Revenue Learning later in the webinar. Let me now introduce you to our panelists. Courtney Halpert has been with Bennett Wilbur for 13 years and is currently the Chief Personnel Officer handling most HR-related items. At Wilbur, Courtney synergizes with operations to ensure organizational health and culture with a goal of inspiring team members to live up to their potential and optimize their productivity. She teaches and speaks on recovery management and leadership topics nationwide and is a sought-out speaker at national conferences and has an alphabet soup after her name. You can check her out on LinkedIn if you want to know more. Kelly Parsons O'Brien is the president of Pacific Credit Services. She's a third-generation debt collector and has worked in the family business for 28 years. Kelly is currently also the legislative co-chair for the California Association of Collectors. She spent the majority of her career working with frontline collectors, helping them develop their skills, teaching them how to help consumers and recover money for her clients. When she's not investing time in the industry and her business legacy, Kelly and her family are developing a homestead and, thanks to COVID, exploring a new love of kayaking. Mm-hmm. Hal Trapp is a seasoned independent consultant specializing in the collections and healthcare revenue cycle management industries. With an impressive 15-year track record, Hal brings a wealth of expertise garnered from senior operations and strategy roles within the healthcare collections landscape. Hal is recognized for his unwavering commitment to process improvement, organizational transformation, and strategic planning. As a dynamic force in the industry, he has consistently championed and spearheaded major organizational initiatives, serving as both a catalyst for change and a dedicated advocate for optimizing processes. In addition to his extensive industry contributions, Hal is currently contributing his insights as a valuable member of ACA International's Healthcare Committee. His strategic vision, collaborative leadership style, and focus on generating tangible return on investment set him apart as a trusted consultant driving success in the healthcare and collections domains. Harry Stouser is our guest moderator today, and he's also the president of Applied Innovation, a software company that serves the armed space. He's a second-generation collection veteran, having grown up in the industry and running two successful collection firms. Throughout his career, Harry's been active in the Mid-Atlantic Collectors Association, where he has served as president, and ACA International, in which he's a senior certified trainer. He has served on ACA International's executive committee and held the position of president in 2004-2005 and is once again a member of its board of directors. He is a member of the International Fellowship of Certified Collection Executives and holds the Master Credit Executive Distinction. In 2010, he was one of the first business professionals in the industry to receive the Credit and Collection Compliance Officer designation. And most importantly, he's going to make sure he's going to kill me, but he's going to want everyone to know that today is his birthday. Happy birthday, Harry. Thank you very much for being here. Everybody who's watching this live will have to sing to Harry, but you're also absolutely invited to ask questions and submit comments during the course of our webinar. You can use the chat or the Q&A to submit your questions and comments. If you wish to participate anonymously, you can click on the anonymous button in the Q&A, and anything that you send to us, I promise, is sent anonymously. With that, I'm going to hand it over to the birthday boy who's going to be running our conversation. So, Harry, it is all yours.
63-year-old birthday boy, right? I don't know where the years go. My goodness.
Are you one? Are you two? You know, it took me a while to get up there, but
Yeah, the webinar will be over. So, well, I can't think of a better group to be talking about this topic today. I've known Hal, Courtney, and Kelly all for a long time. They're all very accomplished speakers and trainers and educators and business operators. So great to be here with you today. We're talking about a topic today that is so critical. You know, for those of us that have been in the collection industry for a long time, you know, I'm second generation. I was 12 when mom and dad opened an agency, became a certified instructor with ACA in 1989. And education and the collector role has changed somewhat over that period of time. And that's what we're here to talk about today. And let's just get it rolling. We've got a number of questions, and we've got a number of great responses, I'm sure. Courtney, why don't we start with you? So, you know, how do you define a great collector? And has your definition of what a great collector is changed over the years?
Mm-hmm. So when I first started in this industry, I had that stereotype view of a great collector is someone who takes a lot of payments, makes a lot of money, and does it in a really rude way. That's where I started. I mean, I was brand new to the industry. And so that was initially what I thought a great collector was. I quickly learned the compliance side and the regulations and moved from being a collector to more of the training role. And when I think about what makes a great collector, it's continued improvement and delivery of results. Plain and simple. That's really how I view someone that's going to be a great collector. Maybe others are going to share adjectives and different verbs, but I really tried to keep it simple here of just the ability to be successful in their role with hitting their metrics consistently. They don't need much inspiration. They just continue to deliver the results over and over, and they keep getting better. Now, one other facet that I'm going to add, which is maybe something a little bit different, is that to be a great collector is that they help others too. That it's not just about them being great in their cubicle, in their desk, in their remote office. It's not just about that person is a great collector. They bring in so much. It's really about, I think, what makes it great is really that extra factor of that they're helping their agency because they're helping others to be successful too. That same it factor they have on the phone is the it factor that they have with those that they're working with. What about you, Kelly?
Yeah.
I'm kind of in the same boat as you. I added a few things. Like, I want them to be easy to manage too. I felt like this was like a little bit of a wish list, right? Like, as we were talking about it, I was like, I'm building the perfect collector. I got my Lego pieces here and I'm building my bot there. But you said all the things I did. You know, the thing that was interesting for me, because I grew up in the industry, so I was a third generation. So my grandfather owned the company before I was born. And so for me, collections was always about customer service, was always created this positive environment. And I remember early on the stories of people getting fired for being rude in our office. And so it was really a different kind of view for me in terms of that. But what I noticed the changes is the compliance. And not that compliance wasn't important back when I first started 30 years ago. It feels like it's more check the box stuff. And so I think from the great collector many years ago, could miss a validation notice, could miss a step in the status code or some process. Whereas now there's just not as much wiggle room for those little bits of oversight avoiding something or missing something. So those are kind of the things that I see changing. And I think it's hard for some great collectors that have been doing it for a while with us putting so much pressure on compliance to still maintain, you know, their authentic self and still make sure that they're doing that check the box compliance. So anyway, so we've been working really hard on trying to figure out how to automate more of that check the box stuff so the collectors can be themselves. But just, you know, one of the things that I noticed is the requirement for management to be so much more focused on that check the box stuff. So
yeah, how? it makes a lot of sense. How?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, for me, you guys covered all the really important stuff. So I think I'll kind of focus on some other pieces here. But, you know, when I think about greatness, I think about a lot of the value add kind of moments where, you know, those really good collectors, the great ones, are finding problems before they really blow up. And they're noticing some trending issues and saying, hey, look, you know, this is my fifth call that's complaining about our payment IVR. And, you know, it's not allowing payments to process on these accounts. It seems like every account that this happens on is blah, blah, blah client. And they're observing patterns. They're recognizing issues. They're raising their hand and saying something about all of them instead of just observing them quietly and saying, yeah, I did think that was weird. So, you know, I think the really great collectors are the ones that benefit the agency as a whole, right? Like they have a way to bring things to light, to make other folks on the team aware of those problems, and help start kind of fleshing out the solution before you even know it's there.
I love that. Sorry, Courtney. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I was going to say, I love that comment about like pointing out the problems, because we've had a few issues recently, and I'm like, could it really just be these two collectors that are having all this problem? And you send a message out and it's like, hey, is anybody else having this? And they're like, oh yeah, all day.
Yeah. My 14th call like this. What do you mean?
Like, really? And I'm like, and it's some of your, and it's, you know, to talk about top producers, it's some of your top producers that don't want to take the 2 seconds it takes to send a chat saying like, hey, this is broken. Right. So it was a flashback to my week. So thank you for that.
Sorry for the trauma.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting based on like what your role is, that really kind of like frames what a great collector is. Kelly, you talked about how early on that with it being a family agency, it was like customer service. Like you were just maybe possibly going in and they were just nice people. You were like, man, these collectors, they are nice people. They have customer service. Where I come from a different background where I had that stereotypical negative view. And then as you move to someone who is a coworker, you're like, man, they're a great collector. I see their numbers. And then as a leader, you're like, they're great because it's easy to work with them. They're great because they're on their end. Like, I don't have to worry about them. They can get the job done, or the compliance. When you're in a compliance role, you're like, they're great because they're being compliant. They're not putting us at any exposure. So I think that definition of great can really kind of go along with what your particular role is and what you think is important to be great.
Oh, yeah, that's a good perspective.
Guys have really got, yeah, that was some great responses there. You know, I think that the change is very evident too for those of us that go back even like another generation. So in more of my age bracket, when I was a kid growing up in the business, I think that collectors were not as much of a team back then. So when you talked about great collectors, you had some really fantastic collectors that they were kind of their own little island. They did their own little thing. Leave Dave alone. Don't even talk to Dave. Let him do his magic, right? And it wasn't as much of a team environment. But today, you know, you need to be great at what you do. You need to strive for that. But you also need to work within the team environment and within the compliance environment. And I think somebody just made a comment in the chat about the other thing that's changed is that consumers have changed, right? Not only compliance, but very different consumer today than what we had 30, 40, and 50 years ago. Somebody commented too about the importance of empathy versus sympathy as well too. And I think that that's how people don't get as burned out. You become great and you maintain your collector role and get good at what you do by not letting it get to you too much, right? You know, empathize, understand, but don't sympathize too much. So great feedback there. Anybody have any final comment before we move on to the next question?
I wanted to ask a quick one. I did see that comment about the empathy and wanted to see your guys' thoughts. That empathy, sympathy, in my head, it's like that it factor. Like you either are empathetic and you think of others, or maybe you just don't. Like, is that something that, as far as like, do you guys have the perspective that you can teach someone to be empathetic? Or on the other end, option number two, is that just something that's an it factor in great collectors?
You know, I had she's my compliance manager now, and she was on the floor and I took over collections, like management of the team. I had step back and I came back to the team. And I told her, I said, you know what, you'd be such a good collector if you didn't believe that you were better than every debtor you talk to. I was like, every time you talk to a debtor and they give you a BS excuse, which we know, we as humans all have BS excuses, right? I call it my excuse Rolodex that I look into regularly to come up with a reason why I'm not going to do something, right? And I just brought it to her attention. I'm like, listen, like, this is, you have to be empathetic. Like, even if you think that they are wrong or you think they should be doing better or whatever it is, you just have to like put yourself in their shoes, right? And it was amazing how much money she collected by just making that change in her thought process. So at least from my perspective, I think empathy is something they absolutely can learn how to do. But it requires an effort, right? It requires being able to self-evaluate or, you know, like have some self-awareness and be able to make that change. Because I think that was another thing that I thought about when we were talking about great versus good is I have collectors that produce money. But I look at their calls sometimes and I'm like, they would be such a much better collector if they would just realize that this is costing them money. And you bring it to their attention, but sometimes ego gets in the way or like, oh, I've been a collector for how many years? You can't tell me anything. Kind of, you know, what they call it, like the prima donna collector that we've, you know, all had in our office. And so I think another way that somebody is great is to be able to say like, you know, like I'm doing really well, but I could do better if I did these things. And oftentimes I find it's that empathy or the judgment that that senior collectors want to apply on a call, right? As soon as they hear like this one word or this one tone, they immediately go into judgment of the debtor. So those are the things that I think. So that's at least my opinion. I think it's trainable. And if you've never watched the Brené Brown short on empathy versus sympathy, it's so great. It's like a cute little video. I think it's like 3 minutes and it's a great way to like, it shows this, what's the difference between empathy and sympathy is. It's a good watch.
That's great. You know, I think we've got a little bit of a debate going on here in the chat about can you teach empathy? Can you train on empathy? You know, I think it's about education is what it is, because when we empathize, we understand. It's about understanding someone else. So if I don't understand you, if I don't understand what it's like to be in debt, if I don't understand what it's like to be homeless, you know, we all can understand sympathy. It's hard to make people, you know, how do you train somebody to be sympathetic, right? Sympathy is, for instance, you know, I'm a dog lover. I'm an animal lover. You know, I get teary-eyed every time the SPCA commercials come on. I hate watching those things. Instantly, I feel really bad. But for me to be able to put myself in someone else's shoes, and this is why we often talk in training about, gosh, if you as a collector have ever had a time in your life where money was tight and there were too many bills and you didn't know how to keep your head above water, that's really valuable when you're talking to people today. Well, I think we need to move on. This is a fantastic conversation. And we do have, why don't we do this? I don't know, Mike, if you were going to give me an alert, but I think it's a good time. We're 20 minutes after the hour. Let's hear from our sponsor today, Chris Rickman.
Thank you, Mike and Harry, and hello, everyone. I'm grateful for the opportunity to sponsor today's webinar. Our company provides Knowledge Source, the leading knowledge, skills, and compliance training platform for companies with collection operations. Knowledge Source is used by our clients to simplify and lower the cost of training both new and in existing employees, whether on-site or remote. A phenomena that impacts virtually every company that's doing any type of training is called the forgetting curve. It describes the rapid, dramatic deterioration of retained knowledge after training that someone has gone through, whether that's onboarding or whether that's any other type of training. And what it leads to is increased mistakes and complaints, missed revenue, dissatisfaction, and it greatly contributes to turnover. Most of the folks that we speak to recognize that the outdated model of onboarding training followed by annual refresher training is inferior to a model where you're using spaced, repetitive micro-learning that promotes much deeper learning. Knowledge Source clients are companies that want to build and maintain a high level of assurance that their staff members have mastered and are maintaining their mastery of the knowledge and skills expected of them when they're interacting with consumers. In summary, Knowledge Source will absolutely help you overcome the forgetting curve. It will increase quality, decrease risk, grow revenue, lower costs, and help reduce turnover. To find out more about us, please visit peakrevenuelearning.com or give me a call. I'm at 803-521-0031. We're here to help make your job easier and to help you and your company be more successful. Thank you very much.
Hey, thanks, Chris. And I've likewise, Chris, I've known you for decades now, I think. Yes. Chris likewise comes from a long, long history in the arm industry with his family and at least second generation, I think, too. So you certainly understand our industry in the education that you offer. And I know you've got a great product because I know lots of people that use it and really value it.
Thank you, Harry.
Yeah, you bet. You bet. Well, let's move on with some of the questions here. Is it all about recovery? So when we think of a collector and we're valuing that collector, is it all about the money they collect and the recoveries? What separates those good ones from great ones? What are the other metrics? So, you know, we talked about some of the dynamics in detail in our first question, but you know, what? How do you determine if you've got 25 collectors on the floor, what is the ranking like? What's it based upon? Hal, do you want to take that one to start?
Yeah, I do. So I think, you know, the sign of an agency that's probably got some culture issues is the one that says definitively, our absolute best collector is the one who makes the most money. Pretty much every time I've been in one of those operations, you find that best collector is actually just a really terrible person. I don't know what the overlap is there, but it seems to be like a universal truth that one person who is prized for only their collection rate and nothing else is just not really nice. They're not helpful. Sometimes they're stealing from team members. I mean, it's always a bad situation. So I think, you know, when you're looking at it, who is a good collector and what makes them really great is that's a part of it, right? They have to make money. That's their job. The other parts, obviously, compliance are tremendously important. I would expect that person to have a very low volume of complaints and probably do a fair bit of resolution of some other people's complaints. If they can, you know, take a second talk off and resolve a problem before it blows up, I mean, that's an asset on your team. That's somebody that you want around. They're fixing more than they're breaking.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. How about Kelly?
I would agree with that. The other thing that I think about with like a great collector is their knowledge of the clients and the company, I think really helps them be more successful. Somebody recently talked a little bit about like how they reward their collectors and they kind of categorize them. Like, so it's not only just revenue gets the most money, it's revenue and it's compliance and it's the KPIs and it's the complaints and it's the Google reviews. And they kind of, put them in different categories. You know, you got top three people, top four, next level. And to me, that was really eye-opening because we often look at that end of the day total and are like, oh, you know, Susie's the top of the board. She's our best collector. But then sometimes I think about Susie and I'm like, well, she gives me heartburn a lot because I do get complaints. And and to Hal's point, she did take the other collector's account accidentally. Right. So, you know, those are kind of those things where, you know, you have those types of people in your group. And, you know, and I think that to me, like when I'm looking at my whole team, you know, like even my Susie will complain, we'll talk about her. She really is just trying to drive herself. And what I find if I look at many of my problem collectors through the year that were top performers is what I find is that they don't truly have the skills to do better in their life, right? These top performing collectors often have other issues going on in their personal life. And I think that's where we as an agency owners or management have an opportunity to help collectors reach their greatness, right? Like, I really believe that greatness is inside everyone. It's just a matter of like, are you going to help them tap into it? And there's a lot of times I was not successful in helping them tap into it and they did need to go work somewhere somewhere else. But I think that it's our job to give it a shot, right? Like to show them, because sometimes nobody else in their life has ever given them that opportunity. And so I think that as you look at those problem collectors that are your top performers, like I think that you also like, what else can you do to help them? And it's, I think the same way we help our consumers too.
Oh, man, I was like, I love these panels. We're talking about numbers, and it's like, I can say if they're a great collector, because, man, they're hitting their numbers. But, Kelly, you just talked about there's so much more about them as a person. I was like, how you talked about, like, teamwork-wise, how are they with team members? Sometimes people really do get stuck on the numbers. They're like, they're such a great collector, and it's the numbers. But really, like, there is more to it when you overall look at that team member. One of the things that I thought of was, like, their diligence. When I think about their diligence, it's, again, like, them motivating themselves. Kelly, you made a great point that it's at work, but also outside, too, where they're diligent, they're disciplined, they're dedicated, they're loyal, all of those words. But it's not just at work. And so I think what also makes a great collector is that they know what their why is. Like, they know why they're working. Like, their life outside isn't chaos. And sometimes, okay, there may be seasons of our lives where everything's chaos. But on a general basis, on their end, they know why they're working. They're coming to work, and they have 8 hours that they're disciplined and dedicated to what the task is. I think one other factor when I think about someone being a great collector is also that they know what their strengths are. Like, they have figured it out. We talked about empathy being this it factor. Those team members that Harry was talking about, if, like, just leave them alone, they're working, they're making money, they have figured out what works for them. They've taken the coaching, they've tried different strategies maybe, but they're not jumping from one to the other, which helps with them being great because they're not going to cause Kelly heartburn. Because they don't have to stray off the path. They don't have to go in ditches and have risky talk-offs. They don't have to, because they already know what's successful for them. And so that also, I think, kind of comes into play when I think about who's a great collector. They know what works for them.
That's some really, really great points. You know, I think that the culture that's manifested in each agency company has a lot to do with the success of the team members that are there. And I know that one of the challenges we're having is kind of a generational issue that's going on today. You've got some agencies that have been around a long time, and they've still got some aged ownership that have some very older viewpoints on how you collect and how you run offices and life issues, and that can offer some really challenges within organizations. But one of the more interesting things that I was able to do as a trainer for ACA, going out and doing in-house programs. Years ago, agencies all across the country had those of us that were training come in. I've been in several hundred agencies. You knew as soon as you walked through the door of a company what the vibe was in that company. The moment you walked onto the collection floor, you could just, I knew before I even got in front of the group the next day what kind of the feeling was to what it was like to work there. And I think that that has a lot to do with the ability to turn collectors from good to great. Somebody mentioned the issue of attitude, and I have found over the years as well, too, that the really great collectors have a great attitude about what they're doing, and they don't, you know, they don't let some of the challenges get in front of them. They're going to just keep that positive attitude all the time, because if you get yourself down because you're having a soft month, you know, that's not going to help you get to the figures that you need to get to without that right attitude.
Harry, you brought up something that of the panel, we didn't bring up that facet of, like, not being phased. We're all going to have a bad call. We are going to have angry individuals that we talk with where they're raising their tone and our heart rate's going and we get a little stressed. But, I mean, that is a great point where they are great collectors because they just keep moving it along. Like, that does make a collector great, that they're not phased. That it doesn't really get to them, that they're like, okay, I had one call where this person really went off on me. But that doesn't faze them. They just keep going to the next call.
Going to the next.
Mm-hmm. And also to note, Harry was one that said aged and old. I would not use those terms, Harry, for knowledgeable and experienced.
I can use them because I'm part of that age demographic. You know, what's interesting, what's funny to me is, and sometimes the concern too, is where there's a real challenge sometimes between a more contemporary viewpoint in operations and the more traditional viewpoint. And mm-hmm. and a lot of times in family-run businesses, and there's a lot of us that were in family-run businesses, it's kind of the changing of the guard, and the guard doesn't want to change sometimes. You know, they should have changed a while ago. And so there's that friction of, you know, what does a culture look like today to be able to take a collector from good to great, which might have been very different 40 years ago when collectors were sitting at a desk with the cigarettes. Right. And using the rotary phones. It was just a different time. Yeah.
When I started managing my team at 18, there were two top collectors that were, I don't know, three times my age probably at that point. And I was told many times that you are not to get in their way. You are not to tell them that what they're doing is wrong. I was like, you know, I'd get in this battle and I'm like, no, they have to do this. And this is the law. And I'm like, and they were like, would you just leave her alone? Her name was Dixie Street. I'll never forget. And she was like, will you just leave Dixie alone? Just let her do her job. I'm like, okay. So I learned when I was finally in charge, I'm like, okay, we are not going to ever have another Dixie Street in our office.
You retired the ashtray with her?
Yeah, we did. Well, you know, it's funny because as a kid going into an office when it smoked, and then they moved into the new building, they moved into the smoking kitchen. So we'd have like a smoking and a non, it was so gross to go in there in the smoking kitchen. So, okay, but I digress. Go ahead.
Well, I, you know, being my birthday today, some friends were joking with me. We were joking about being kids. Okay, so imagine me growing up as a kid in the 60s. Mom and Dad both smoked, and we went on vacations. I'm in the back seat of the car. You can't see me back there because the whole the smoke in the place. That'd be like child abuse today, right? I mean, you can't do that to kids. But that's what it was like back then. Well, we do digress. Let's move right on. All right, good question. This is a mix of talents that make up a great collector. You may have someone who's really good at negotiating. You've got someone that might be a good negotiator, but they're slower at the wrap-ups and vice versa. Do you have a preference for what you consider to be the most important skills possessed by a great collector? I mean, we've been talking about a lot of dynamics, but what is just the absolute most important in your opinion? Kelly, why don't you start that one off?
So, you know, I mean, I think the negotiation, the negotiation by far is the best. I mean, I'd much rather have a collector that it was an exceptional conversationalist, somebody that could build rapport and collect the money. I think that when you're dealing with like the slower post-call stuff, with technology these days, I feel call handling or like note taking, moving the account through the system should never be a barrier for us anymore. I mean, I think a lot about in my earlier years of like on like, you know, press this button and this code goes this. There was so much. And now like there's so much automation, like, you know, our system that listens to our calls gives like does note taking for the collectors. So they just copy and paste it into our history notes, actions move the account through the system. So I think really when we're talking about a mix of talent, it's the attitude, it's the conversationalist, it's the negotiation ability to collect the money is really, in my mind, the top talent that I want from my best collectors.
Yeah, I completely agree. I was the first word that popped in my head when that question was asked was relatability. So in a 4-minute phone call, you have to quickly be relatable, be likable enough that somebody wants to have a difficult conversation with you. Being on the other side of a collection call isn't fun for anyone. Nobody enjoys that experience. They're not excited to answer those phone calls. They're not happy to call into those centers. It's not pleasant for them. So being somebody that can quickly kind of relate and be easy to talk to and sort of create an open door environment there, is going to make you far more successful than somebody who's a little abrasive and just doesn't sound like somebody I'd want to talk to.
Sure.
And I take it on more of on a like that collector as a person. So Kelly, I loved your comment about technology because with technology, with that it really takes some of the drudgery out of work. Like click the button, click this. And what you referenced as like being great was really those soft skills that technology is not going to be able to handle that. And while technology can handle what would be the drudgery of work, click here, click there, memorize this, that technology is not going to do that. So that great collector has to have that skill, which is also what Hal talked about, of being relatable, where mine is a little bit different. When we talk about being able to negotiate, take notes, wrap up calls, it really, when I think about a skill, it's really that discipline and diligence, just keep going. Like that is something of like, that talks about in a talk off, being able to, you hit a obstacle, they have a dispute, how am I going to handle it? Okay, carry on. So I think when I think of like what is something, a characteristic or skill set that a great collector has to have, is really just keep chugging along. Do not be derailed. So I kind of take it on a like personal, because some skills, like we talked about, empathy, we can teach. Technology can handle some things, but I'm not sure if you can inspire and motivate everybody. Sometimes it has to come from within. And if they're going to be great, I want them to be great at continuing to move forward with their day.
So that's a good segue. We're talking about technology. We're in kind of an interesting time today. So for decades in our industry, it was all about driving consumers to call centers and collection agencies and talk to collectors, right? It's all about talking to the collector. Now it's about self-serving, right? We're it's about self-servicing on portals, making payments on portals. We don't necessarily want the collector to have to waste their time talking to consumers, make them pay on a portal. What are your feelings? Is there a lesser need today for great collectors, or is there actually a greater need today? Because by the time someone actually gets to a collector that hasn't, self-served, there's a more a meatier conversation. What do you think? Courtney, let's start with you.
Yeah, I am on the side. There is a greater need for great collectors. Technology can do so much, but there's that certain point where you're going to have to talk to someone, or you're going to need an explanation from someone. And so they need to be a great collector that has those soft skills that can be relatable, that can help to kind of solve what the problem is that maybe technology cannot do. So the end point, those charts of flow charts, yes, no. If the answer cannot be found with technology, it's going to have to go to a person. And you want that person to be a great collector. That's what the answer is. So I feel my vote is there's a greater need for great collectors, even with technology. Kelly?
Yeah, I'm 100% in agreement there. And I found in the last couple of training groups that I moved my new collectors on inbounds too early. And the reason I say that is because what I realized is that these right party contacts that we were getting from these inbound calls needed a greater collector, because if somebody was just calling in to make payment, like the old days, they just go to the portal, right? They just use the IVR. And so the people that were calling our office were actually needing somebody that was knowledgeable, a better problem solver. And so we've changed kind of our process on like how our new agents handle calls. One thing that I'd like to implement on my new next batch is to really train our new collectors more as transfer agents, so they could stay on the line when the more senior collector handles that right party contact. Because what I found in this last couple of groups is we lost so much money just because of lack of knowledge, right? You go through the training, we use Knowledge Source, right? We do all of those things, but sometimes a new collector just needs like a little extra help. And if you're putting a not so great collector on your right party contacts, I think we need to look at how much more we're training and how much more support we're giving like the newer or the not so great collectors. Because of every right party contact is like so much more valuable at least in our office compared to where it was before. Like I didn't, not to say that I didn't care care about the right party context, but it was kind of like not such a big deal because there was a lot of them. And now when there's not very many, I'm like, everyone is gold. How do we maximize everyone?
Oh my gosh, we've got a consumer on the phone. They're actually on the phone. Let's talk to them, right?
You know, and I think, Harry, like it has a lot to do with like how long we've been in the industry, right? Like I think about like newer people in the industry have no concept of calling a house and somebody picking up because there wasn't an answer. Like there were just no answering machines. I mean, like some of my early training manuals have nothing to do with messages because it just was not a thing. And so, you know, when you come from that environment where like the volume on the floor is constant, like they're always talking to someone, to going to a place now where we have these lulls of conversation as we get through our inventory, I think it's like, at least for me, it was such a shock, you know, kind of over the last, I don't know, 5-6 years when it's just kind of, you know.
Sure.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I agree with the overall point, definitely, that as things get more complex, there will be a greater need for great collectors. I think, you know, we are probably going to hit a point where we don't need as many collectors overall, right? Probably a lot of agencies are already starting to see that. But to Kelly's point, those inbound calls, you know, are people that have gone through their self-service options. So they've gone through your payment portal, they've gone through your IVR, they've gone through your chatbots, whatever. All of those things didn't work. Now they need something else, right? And that person needs to be pretty specifically prepared to deal with that. You know, case in point, Amazon has a fantastic self-service process. I mean, you can self-service almost anything through their app, and they still staff a call center. Because when something gets bad enough, what does everybody do? They pick up the phone and call somebody. And that's what people do because it gets results. It allows you to, you know, skip whatever system thing you're butting up against. It allows you to, you know, move into the correct workflow when you got pushed off into the wrong one. It's the great fixer in those situations. And I think that we need to understand that those calls are only going to be more complex as a default because of that. So that, you know, if every call was either somebody calling in just to pay their bill or is this, you know, absurdly complex thing, well, now all the just to pay your bill calls are gone. So it's just the complex calls. So it's become more challenging. Certainly we're going to need fewer collectors for that, but they need more training, more specific training. And you know, you probably really, really ought to understand where that volume is coming from in order to kind of help equip them for those situations.
Yeah, some really great points. Do you think that there's, you know, we talk about driving people into making calls to your office and how important those calls are because they've got real questions. Do you think agencies have to be even more prepared for the inbound traffic? Don't let people wait. Make sure you've got the right responses because we've all been, to your point, Hal, we've all been those customers where we make a call and the person can't help us or we wait forever or we get transferred or it's a frustrating experience.
I'll say, I'll go. I think it honestly is like how I love real life, like examples when we talk about like Amazon and like how easy it is. And yet they still have people. I think the people that call in, I think, to Kelly's point, like they're gold, like they want to get it taken care of. And the other automated self-service wasn't working for them. And so they're calling in, they're gold. They want to get it taken care of. And if we can't answer their questions and we can't help to get them resolved and get that payment, they may just give up. Where before, they would call and then give up. It's like, no, they're taking steps and they're trying. And if we don't have a good, or we don't have a great collector that takes that call, we may lose that payment because they may just give up on trying to get it taken care of.
Sure.
Yeah. I was on a call the other day and they were like, make sure your phone system, no matter where it's at, if they press zero, they get somebody. You know what I mean? Because that's one of those things that, like, no matter what part of your voicemail tree or your IVR is, you should not have any roadblocks on them getting a live person because if they're in a situation, because if they have to do anything else, they likely are just going to hang up and you're going to lose that opportunity. Hey, I just wanted to answer a question Lisa had in the chat about how to get a new collector to be more confident on a call. And, you know, and this is one of those things, it's, you know, I know Mary Shores talks talks about the fear, right? Like the fight or flight method. New collectors go through that same thing that debtors go through. And so I think as agency management, I think that we have to spend so much more time doing role playing and listening to other collectors' calls and really, invest more time there and figure out how you can automate more of the check the box stuff, right? And what I found is once I did that for my training and spent more time doing the real life stuff, the collectors were so much more confident when they got on the phones because they really understood whatever you were putting them in front of. Be cautious not to give them too many industries or too many client base, like try to give them one type of client for a while. Those are all little things that I think really make a difference. And oftentimes, if you can make that first, few calls more valuable, you'll be more closer to having a good or great collector, right? It's really those first few calls that give the collector an opportunity to be like, oh, I can do this. This is great for me. So you want them to be successful.
Yeah, just adding on to that a little bit, confidence ultimately comes from knowledge and comfort in what you're doing, right? You can't possibly fake confidence. It crumbles pretty quickly when you try. It really comes from some certainty about either what you're doing or the response that you're going to get from it. And a lot of that, to Kelly's point, is just repetition. If you spend a lot of time practicing those calls and getting a real environment to go through those steps, then, when you get to that opening and you're asking to speak to Kelly Parsons O'Brien, you can really confidently project that instead of this sort of mousy squeak where you're, asking for Kelly Parsons O'Brien, and you don't sound like you know what you're doing. You can only do that if you've done that 100 times. So I think a lot of times we're in a rush to get people, to the production floor, get on the phones, teach them what they're doing, get them really comfortable with it, because otherwise they're just going to fumble. And once they've started on that negative thing, it's hard to build the confidence back up from the deficit, whereas they came in before with zero.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
As their confidence is growing, I think it's also important to celebrate and assure them along the way. Kelly, I wish we could just give them easy wins. I wish the first 5 calls could just be easy call-ins. They're going to pay. This is really easy. I wish it was like that, but they're kind of going to have maybe a couple of difficult calls. But when along the way, in order for them to be confident, like Hal said, they start with nothing. We really have to build them up. I mean, this good to great, it's like watering a flower, and it's going to take time, and we have to keep reassuring them, giving them confidence, giving them feedback. True, they have to do the work. They have to take the coaching. But also, within the agency, your leadership needs to be pouring into them in order to kind of help them learn to be confident. Confidence doesn't happen. Sometimes people have their own negative self-images, their own negative self-talk, life experiences that have them viewing themselves in a I can't do this manner. And so in order to have that change, that perspective, sometimes they need reassurance from someone else that they're doing a good job, that they did a great job, and to be boosted up. And it may sound really rudimentary, elementary, it may sound like that, but it's really at the root of in order for people to feel confident in themselves, they sometimes really do need reassurance from someone else that they're doing a good job.
Being educated and knowledgeable is one way, of course, to get, get the nerves settled down. And so that's why, if you've been a collector for 15 years, it's like having a PhD in collections, right? You've been there, you've done it, you've heard thousands, you've had thousands of conversations. And every now and then something new happens, right? That's kind of the excitement of being a collector. You've never heard that one before. But that repetitive nature of it, and you've been there, you've done it, just like people who speak, the 4 of us speak in the industry. Well, the reason we tend to be rather comfortable doing that is that we're talking about things that we understand and know, right? That are second nature to us. If you give us a topic we've never talked about before, you'd be a little bit more nervous. All right, a couple more questions. We've got a little bit more time. We've got about 9 minutes. Great sharing that those of you are over on the chat. Got a lot of great ideas going on there. Do you treat great collectors differently than good collectors? Is there a differentiation there?
We turn off the recording. Oh. I I think that we, at least from my perspective, I think we want to say we treat all our collectors or all our staff the same. But I think that there are collectors, like not even your top performers, collectors that just, they're easier to manage, right? They come in, they know their job, they're self-motivated, they move forward. But I think that like the way that I read this when I was thinking about this question is like, I think what this tells us is that if you answered yes, you do treat them better or differently, then I think that it gives you an opportunity to say is like, what could I do to make my good collectors great by pouring more into them? Like, what else can I pour into these collectors that are already doing their job, investing in our team, making them better? And so for me, that was really like a little bit of an eye opener of like, okay, I have some good collectors. What else can I pour into them and make them great collectors? Because I think there's opportunity there. So the short answer is yes. Yes, Harry, a little bit.
Yeah, I think you definitely treat them differently. What type of difference I think matters there. For the great collectors, I think I tend to focus more on just making sure that they have their needs met. And that's more of like an environmental kind of supportive level. You know, are they getting the encouragement that they need, or do they have the tools that are working to keep them successful? They already kind of know what they're doing. In a lot of ways, you're staying out of their way and letting them produce the results they're capable of producing and recognizing them for having done so. That last part's really important, by the way. Then to Kelly's point, that time that you save on those can be put into those good collectors to make them the great ones, and be spent with the really bad ones, making sure that they don't work for you anymore, and all sorts of really great solutions because you have more time.
I took my HR hat and I was like, I'm going to rephrase this question. If I'm going to answer this question, I'm going to make sure that I rephrase it and not do I treat them differently, but the engagement different. With great collectors, you're not engaging with them as much. They're diligently working. They're consistently hitting their numbers. Where a good one, you are pouring into. And so I'm not going to say whether I treat them differently. I will say the engagement between how collectors are, good collectors and great collectors with their leadership, it is different, because when there's a great collector, they're doing great. You don't have to mess with them very much. They're easy to work with. Where the good ones, you're going to be talking with them a lot more.
I think I just want to maybe put an explanation point on Hal's point about making sure that you're acknowledging your great collectors for doing what they like. You know, like, it's easy to point out the ones that are not doing their job right, and you spend more time with them. And I think the ones that come in and do their job, that you may miss opportunities to tell them that they're doing a good job. And so, you know, I noticed that, you know, that's something that intentional reward or, you know, like acknowledgement's been something I've been working on the last couple of years. And for my great collector, just taking a second to pick up the phone and being like, hey, I saw those numbers you put on the board yesterday. Excellent work. Like, way to go. And it's such a small amount of time for me, but it means so much to them, because they really pride themselves in doing a good job. And it's easy to miss them because you almost expect it from them.
Do you think that great collectors get so ingrained in what they're doing, they get on, you know, they're working in this pathway, it's really hard for them to change? And it's related to Carly asking a question, do you have any suggestions on how to get someone with collections experience to get on board with your company's procedures? How do you get them to break old habits? So, you know what, they are a great collector in company A, they have performed phenomenally well, they were the king or queen of the heap there. Now they moved to another company. Are those transitions tough? And how is there any secret way to get them to comply to the new way of doing business? Hal, do you want to take that one? Or any of you that have a question or response?
I think it actually goes back to, it's not just about the numbers. Just because you're great and you can hit the numbers somewhere else, doesn't mean that you can take the coaching, you can learn what the culture is, you can be a good team member at agency B. And so I think it is a really tough transition when we talk about having someone who was quote unquote great somewhere else, because great is not just hitting numbers. You hit numbers one place, it doesn't mean that you're going to be adaptable and can transition to doing it at a different agency.
Yeah, totally agree with that too. And I think part of being really great is being flexible, is not being so bound up in a one single way of approaching all of your problems. I think hopefully that's coming out in interviews. This is kind of my first thought with that, is that if I'm interviewing an experienced collector, my line of questioning is probably going to be a little bit different. I'm probably going to focus a little bit more on specifically how they approached things before. I think the big differentiator is what's their personality versus what was the thing that they were, sort of trained in, the standard they were held to at the last organization. It's probably something to focus on, because, ultimately they might have been doing something that wasn't necessarily their natural place at organization A, that, they can change really easily at your organization. However, if it's kind of a core part of who they are, maybe I'm a little more reluctant to hire that person because that's just a behavioral trait. So I think being able to get to the distinction of, is this, trained behavior that you're complying with, or is this kind of your core personality, really sort of differentiates, am I hiring that experienced collector? In general, I'd say I'm sort of reluctant of experienced collectors, but would never disqualify somebody solely based on that.
And I think both of you have really good points. And for somebody that's kind of turned experienced collector around, like, they come on board and we've worked through some of that, is sitting down with them and saying, like, here are the areas that I need change on. And we talk about how do you think that's going to impact your totals? Because really at the end of the line, like the best collect, like a good collector from another agency that comes on board is really hoping to make as much of or more money than they made at the last agency. I mean, many of them are really focused on that. And so oftentimes I find that when we're trying to make those changes, they think it's going to impact their ability to collect. And if you can show them that it won't, or that the things that you're asking them to do are going to help them make more money, I find that having that collaborative conversation with them really helps make the change. And there's been times where those collaborative conversations don't work and they do have to not work for me anymore. But oftentimes I find that if you can have that conversation and show them how your goal is to be for them to be successful, right? I mean, that's all of our goals, is for them to be financially successful, because it helps us. So if they can hear that and see that, I usually find that the turnaround isn't very hard.
One maybe final question. We've got about a minute left. Most agencies that I talk to are struggling to find collectors, to find bodies. They're probably listening to us talk about great collectors. They're thinking, I would love to get a body in a seed. Quite frankly, I'd love to have a whole company full of really pretty good people so that I could work with them rather than just nurturing people to be great. Is there any merit to that? Or did we take our eye off of being great? Should we settle for just be kind of being kind of good? What do you think, Hal?
If I had a team full of eights, I don't think I'd be disappointed, to be perfectly honest. You have to have somebody in a seat, right? I would say, though, if you're starting to hire some really questionable hires just to fill seats, you're probably doing more harm than good. But yeah, there's absolutely nothing wrong with average and above average. There are plenty of people that are going to come in and do a pretty average job every single day, really consistently, and that might be enough for your needs. When you've got a team full of those, then worry about it.
Courtney, last comment?
Yeah, I think when we think about good to great, sometimes it's not the time to be investing to get people to be great. Like Hal said, sometimes good is good.
Kelly, you can bring it to a close. What do you think?
Yeah, I think there's an opportunity. Each agency is going to have to evaluate as to where they're at in their group of employees. And sometimes there's been times in my history that I did need a good collector and only a good collector because I didn't have time for great. So I absolutely think there's value there. And through training and development, get everybody to the good spot, and you're going to make a decent amount of money doing with good collectors. But if you want a great culture and more money, you're going to keep moving towards that greatness.
Well, we are at the end of our time. We want to thank our audience for joining us today. And I want to thank Mike for bringing me on to host with not a bunch of good panelists, but some great panelists today.
Thanks, Harry.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Harry, for an amazing job moderating. Courtney, Kelly, Hal, thank you so much. Appreciate your participation. Chris Brickman, thanks to you and Peak Revenue Learning for sponsoring today's webinar. Everyone can check them out. PeakRevenueLearning.com. Thanks to everybody who watched and listened. Appreciate you making us part of your day. There was the engagement, the participation in the chat today. It was nonstop. So thanks to everybody for being a part of today's webinar. If you're watching us live, we're back on Monday with a webinar on segmenting accounts to optimize your digital collection efforts. So understanding how to segment your accounts into different buckets. Got a great panel lined up for that. You can find the link in the chat to register, or you can find the link in the events calendar at accountsrecovery.net. I will tell you in advance that event, the webinar is Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. We're pre-recorded. We've got Armlaw next week. We'll be in Nashville. Chris Richmond will be there. Some of you also will also be there. Look forward to seeing you there. If you're not there, still have time to sign up. Armlaw.accountsrecovery.net is the website. We'd love to see you in Nashville next week. So to all of you, thanks so much for being here. Have a great rest of your Friday. Have a great weekend. And we look forward to seeing everybody soon.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, guys.